Okay, so we are holding on Mem Zion Omid Aleph, second one. Okay, still continuing on the topic of Muktzah. In particular, now we're going to focus on something that we were discussing yesterday, the matter of Bosses, the Dabar Osir. We touched on it here and there throughout the sugya the last couple of days. In particular, we ended up saying before that according to Reb Shimon, a reason why you can't move a lit lamp on Shabbos is because everything in the lamp, the container itself and the wick and the oil, is all a Bosses for the flame, which is a Dabar Osir. So let's talk more about this matter of Bosses for Dabar Osir. There's more to itself. Omer of Zera, Omer of Asi, Omer of Yechanan, Omer of Chanina, Omer of Rabbi Roimanus. A bit unusual to have such a long chain over there, but there you go. But Rabbi Roimanus says, Li hiti Rebbe l'talto machta be'efra. Rebbe gave me permission on Shabbos that to handle a shovel or brazier or something like that with the ashes in it. So this machta, typically what you use for is, it's used, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we also learned in Brachas about the concept that they had in those days of mugmar, where you would burn spices or incense or something in a room in order to make it smell good. Sometimes you would put it under clothing in order to perfume them or whatever. So you had a kind of container called a machta, because machta literally means a shovel or a scoop, because that's what it looked like. It has a cover on top of it. It has a cover on top of it with holes in it for the smoke and the fragrance to come out. Sort of Romanus is saying that Rebbe told him that he's allowed to handle that container on Shabbos with the ashes in it. Right now, for purposes of the beginning of the discussion, the Gemara is assuming that what it means is that since the machta itself is a keli, so even though it's a keli that whose purpose is an iftar, because the usual purpose you use for is for burning incense, which is also on Shabbos. So therefore, you would have the usual rule would apply to a klisha malachta le'isr that you're allowed to move it when it's for tzorach gufo yomakarnei, when it's for the purpose of either you need the object itself for some permissible use on Shabbos. Let's say, for example, you can't use it to burn incense in on Shabbos, obviously, but you could use it, let's say, as a stand to put things on top of or whatever, or tzorach mekarnei if it's in the way and you need it out of the way. So the Gemara is assuming at this point that that's what it means, that it means that even though the ashes in an Amukta, and the Gemara is assuming at this point that the ashes are Mukta because you didn't pre-designate before Shabbos that you plan to use them, and according to the Yehuda, as we've talked about a lot of times, he would say that just such a thing as Mukta. Welcome. We started. We're on the line of an hour for a couple of lines from the top. The Gemara is assuming right now, let's see, the machta itself is a klisha malachta le'isur. The ashes in it, the Gemara is assuming, are mukta in the sense that you didn't have in mind before Shabbos that you're planning to use them. And according to the Yehuda, that's part of the definition of mukta. Therefore, at this point, at this stage, the Gemara is assuming that what it means is, even though there's ashes in it, because the machta itself, because this incense burner itself is a keli, therefore there are cases in which you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos, namely l'tzorach gufo yomakarnei, where you need the object that where you're using the object itself for a purpose that's mutter on Shabbos, or where you need the space where it was. So let's analyze that. Amar Rav Zera l'Rabasi. So Rav Zera reported this in the name of Rabasi, but then he asked Rabasi, "Mi Amar Rav Yechanan Hachi? Did Rav Yechanan really say that?" That type of thing would be allowed, where you have a keli that you're allowed to move on Shabbos, but it contains within it something which you're not allowed to move on Shabbos. Would that be mutter? Wouldn't it be a bosser for Dabar HaOsir? So in this case, wouldn't the machta be a bosser for Dabar HaOsir for the ashes, and therefore it should be also to move it on Shabbos, even if it's go for an environment? Well, it's not. We learn in a Mishnah later in our Masechta, the beginning of the 22nd Perek, Noitel Adam B'noi V'Evan B'Yadoi, a person is allowed on Shabbos to pick up his young son Even though the child is young, the child, whatever, even though the child is holding a rock in his hand, and a rock is Muktzah Shabbos, nevertheless, you're allowed to pick up the kid, even though he's holding the rock. Later on, when we get to that Mishnah, in a few months, that's the Shem, we'll talk about what the Gemara says, that we're talking about a specific case over there, where the kid is going to get sick if his father doesn't from a tantrum or whatever. If his father doesn't pick him up, so then you're allowed to. Otherwise, you would have to get him to put down the rock first. But anyway, the point is that you have a concept where sometimes you're allowed to indirectly handle something muktzah, namely you pick up the kid and in the kid's hand is a rock. And the Braita continues, the Mishnah continues, or you're allowed on Shabbos to pick up a basket, even though there's a stone inside the basket. Same thing, the stone is Mukta, and yet you're allowed to pick up the basket. But we're not just talking about where the basket is empty. We're talking about where the basket actually contains fruit in it, so it has. So it's not a basis l'davar asur because it contains two things in it. One of them, it contains fruit and it contains the rock. Therefore, it's not a basis l'davar asur. Just like we talked about previously. For example, that if you have the Shabbos table, you have the candles on it and also the chalas. Then we say you're allowed to move the table on Shabbos because it wasn't a basis l'davar asur at the beginning of Shabbos. So by the same token there, you have a basket which has fruit in it and also a rock. So you're allowed to pick up the basket with the rock in it. The Gemara there also discusses that it's not so simple. It depends what kind of fruit there is in the basket, etc. But anyway, the point is you have the basic concept that there is a case where you're allowed to handle the basket where it has an eben in it, where it has a stone in it, but time of the Isfei Peri, Bos Peri, that would apply only if there was fruit in the basket, Holes La Peri Loi, implying that there's no fruit in it. If the basket only contains a stone, then it's also. And you're not even allowed to then pick up the basket and shake it out in order to get the stone out, because again, the basket itself is also, is as Mukta as Bos Kodavah also. So then in that case, applying that to our case of this brazier over here, of this incense burner, why should you be allowed to move it? Very nice. The brazier itself is a klisha malachta leser. So what? And a basket is a klisha malachta leheser. And yet you're not allowed to pick up the basket if it contains only a stone. So why should you be able to pick up the machta if it contains ashes, which again at this stage we're assuming are mukta, would be according to the Behorda the mukta. Especially, we learned before, not only the question is on Rabbi Yehuda, the question is also that Rabbi Yechon, we learned before, that Rabbi Yechon himself agrees with Rabbi Yechon himself agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi says. So therefore, we learned before. So how could Rabbi Yechanan say that Rebbe had said you're allowed to pick up the Machta on Shabbos, even though it contains ashes, which are Mukta according to Rabbi Yehuda, if Rabbi Yechanan himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda on the definition of Mukta? So the Gemara says, Ashtoinam Kishor Choda. So Rav Asi was stunned or quiet for a little while. Right? He's trying to think of an answer. And then he says, you have this expression, by the way, in a few places in Shas, where somebody was asked a question, and then like he was silent for a while before he thought of an answer. In various places in Chiddush, it talks about the deeper idea behind it that you have before you're able to express something in speech, you need a higher level of bittul. You need that ashtoimim kashar chada to develop that sense of bittul. And you're going away, you always have, you know, when you're going from one stage to another, you need to go through an intermediate stage where you lost the first thing and haven't come to the second thing yet. The Alphabet mentions it, for example, in the introduction to Shari Yechavah Munah. That's what you have, for example, when you're going from one level to the other in Avodas Hashem. You have a point where the old level is no longer satisfactory. You're on a higher level now. You need to start working on a higher level. And meanwhile, you have that transitional period where you have to just rely on the inborn emunah that you have. So the same way, there's the idea. In other words, like he previously had an idea. Now he needs to abandon that idea and come up with a new one. And therefore, he needs that sense of bittul for a little while to say that old idea was nullified and now we have a new idea. The Alter Rebbe also talks about it in the Siddur and Dach, about we have a similar concept with Nefilas HaPayim, after the silent Shemoneh Esrei, where at least we're talking to Hashem, now we have a point where we just basically throw ourselves down wordlessly in front of Hashem. That's similar to the Shem of Kesha HaFada, and then you're able to reach a higher level of closeness with Hashem. Anyway, so Ashtoinam Kesha HaFada, he was stunned for a little while, but Omar, and then Rav Asi gave an answer, Hochanami de'ispa kautin. Here also, what we have to be talking about is the machta does not only contain ashes from the incense, it also contains little bits of the incense, little bits of levoina that were not burnt, and those are not mukta, because those you could use to smell on Shabbos. So therefore, it's not a basis for davar ha'asur anymore. It contains something which is asur and something which is mutter, just like the Shabbos table with the challah and the candles. However, the Gemara asks, Omar Abaya Kautin be Rebbe Michashevi. So Abaya says, what are you talking about? In Rebbe's household, Rebbe was very, very rich, as we know. Would little pieces of Levoina mean anything to him? When we talk about this concept that a bosses for Dabra Osir, that it can be made not a bosses, if you have something there, if you have something else there that's mukta, the something else has to be something of importance. Not necessarily important as far as like it has to be worth more financially or whatever. I mean, for example, the challahs aren't necessarily worth as much as the silver, or, you know, you use silver candlesticks, for example, are worth a lot more than the challahs. But the point is, it's something that's important to you, and therefore it prevents it from being a boss for Dabra Osir. These little pieces of levoina that don't get burnt in Rebbe's household aren't going to mean anything. We're talking that Rebbe gave permission to the Brunnenus, the Pashtus we're talking about in Rebbe's household, to move the machta with the ashes in it on Shabbos. So how could he do that? If you're saying because it's not a boss with the brother, also because of the pieces, those pieces are not enough in Rebbe's household to make it not a boss with the brother, also. The chitema, so you're going to answer, what's the difference? Once they have chashivos in one person's house, then who cares if they don't have the same chashivos in another person's house? So you're going to say, maybe not. No, v'hatanya. We learn in a braisa, big day aniyim la'aniyim, clothes of poor people are considered clothes for them relative to the dinim of tumah and tara. Big day ashirim la'ashirim, rich people's clothing for rich people, and certainly for poor people, but not poor people's for rich people. Which means Rashi says like this, two possibilities. First of all, we talked about before, we learned back on Daf Chavtes, we talked about the concept of, we talked about the concept of different sizes of pieces of cloth that are makabel tumah. By the way, part of the discussion we had there on Daf Chavtes had to do with one of the makabel tumah of Taras, which is of course relevant to this week's parasha, so Nyan and Yen. Anyway. We said over there that you have two different sizes. We said there's certain situations and certain kinds of cloth where it's makabel tumah when it's only 3x3 etzbos. And we said the reason was because poor people will keep such a piece of cloth and use it for a patch. Whereas then you have most kinds of cloth, and for other kinds of tumas, they're makabel tumah when you have 3x3 tefachim. Because 3x3 tefachim is already a large enough piece of cloth that you could use it to sit on. So therefore, what we're saying over here, Abaya is quoting from a braisa, is that when it comes to a piece 3x3 etzbos, it's only considered, when we say that's a begin, it's a kabel tumah, that means only relative to poor people. A rich person who happens to have a piece of cloth of that size, a 3x3 etzbos, in their possession, it wouldn't be makabel tumah, because to a rich person, such a piece of cloth is meaningless. He's going to throw it away. As opposed to, if you have a piece 3x3 tefachim, then it's considered a beged even for a rich person, and certainly for a poor person, because a poor person would also obviously use such a piece. So therefore, we see, it's not the other way around. A piece 3x3 etzbos is not considered to have any significance to a rich person, and if it's in his house, it's not makabel tumah. Rashi gives another possibility also. We're not just talking about the size, we're also talking about the type of cloth. If we're talking about a coarse cloth, for example, if you have, let's say, a coarse cloth, again, a poor person doesn't care about the quality of their cloth. They'll take whatever they can get, whereas a rich person is more picky, and they're not going to wear or use pieces of cloth of such coarse quality in their house. Same idea, then. It would be makabel tumah by the poor person's house and not by the rich person's house. So we have the same thing, in other words, as far as the pieces of Lavoina. Fine, a poor person in a poorer person's household, they might be significant enough to prevent the machta from being mukta, but surely not in Rebbe's household. So how are we saying that in Rebbe's household, we're allowed to move a machta with, even with the pieces of Lavoina, even with the unburned pieces of Lavoina in it, on Shabbos? By the way, Tosfos discusses over here that when we say, when with this concept that we make a distinction between a poor person's house and a rich person's house, Tosfos says that would only apply to Tumas Midra. That would only apply to the special Tumah that you have when a Zog sits or leans or what have you on an item where it becomes Tumah. That's where we make this distinction that a piece of cloth that's suitable for a poor person and not for a rich person is Makabel Tumas Midra if it's in the poor person's house and not if it's in the rich person's house. When it comes to other kinds of Tumas, Tosfos says it doesn't make a difference. Then it's Makabel Tumah. Then again, we learned when it comes to Tumas Saras, this exposure, that it's that 3x3 as far as Makabel Tumah, and there it doesn't matter whether the person is poor or rich. Anyway, the point is, again, that we see that the status of something in halacha, whether it's considered to have any significance, depends on whether depends on whether the person considers it to be significant. So in Rebbe's household, where they don't consider unburnt pieces of Lavoina to be significant, then those wouldn't prevent the pan with the ashes in it from being a bosser for Dabar Aser. So we're back to the question, how is your Groymanus able to carry it around on Shabbos? Ela Amar Abaya. Abaya says no. The reason why it works, midi dehavi agraf shari'i. The reason why it works is because it's considered like a bucket, like a pail full of waste. Now we know, for example, that we touched on this a few days ago, that there is a concept in halacha. You have, let's say, for example, human waste is going to be mukta on Shabbos because you don't really have any particular use for it on Shabbos. But nevertheless, we have a halacha that if you have a graf shorim, if you have a bucket, a pail or whatever, into which a person went to the bathroom, then afterwards you're allowed to move it out of the way on Shabbos because it's disgusting because you can't have it around your house. So by the same logic, Abaya is saying we would say the same thing over here. Once the incense has finished burning, you don't want to have this thing sitting around with ashes in your living room the rest of the day. Therefore, it would be like a gratuity, and therefore you'd be allowed to spill it out. Therefore, you'd be allowed to take it out. So, in other words, Abaya is saying, in effect, sure, of course it's a boss with a davar aser, but this is an exception where the same chachamim who said that a boss with a davar aser, you can't move on Shabbos, they made an exception for a gratuity. The problem with that is Omar Rabba Shtei Tumas Badaver. The problem is Rabba says I have two problems with that explanation. Chada graf shari mois v'holei mois. Number one, a graf shari by definition is something disgusting, and here it's not really so disgusting. Okay, you don't like having a thing full of ashes in your room. It's not like a container full of human waste where it stinks and whatever. So you can't say that the chachamim therefore would allow it just because you don't like to have a thing with ashes in your room. And also, v'oid graf shari'i nigri behind nixi. A graf shari'i is something that does not normally have a cover. Here, this thing has a cover. The ashes are, okay, the cover has holes in it, but unless you're going to start peeking through the holes, you're not going to even see the ashes. So then in that case, it's not a graf shari'i. So that explanation doesn't work either. Okay. Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says no. The answer is as follows. Your premise let's revisit the premise. First of all, Rava says, let me give you an example from what we did. Ki Havenan Deir of Nachman, when we Talmidim were at the house of the Nachman on Shabbos, having the Talmidim Knuna Agav Kitma, we would move on Shabbos a knuna, which is similar to a machta, except you don't use it for incense. You use it to warm up the house. So it's like a portable stove, a portable heater, or whatever. So we would move it. So we would move it on Shabbos. But afagav the ikra le shivrei etzim, even though there are broken pieces and splinters of wood on it. In other words, Rashi says it's the other way around. You're thinking all this time that the problem with the machta was that, like this, the machta itself should have been mutter to carry, and then you're saying that the question is, but how can you carry it with the ashes on it? And we're saying that we were trying to give answers that the within the ashes there are things that are important, or the ashes are a glass or e. Now Rava is saying that no, the whole point is that the whole point is it's not also because of the ashes. As a matter of fact, the ashes are not considered mukta. Not like we thought all along that we're going like Rabbi Yehuda and saying that the ashes are mukta. Rather, at this point, we're going to be going like Rabbi Shimon and saying that the ashes are not also to move, because the ashes themselves have something that you could use, have a purpose that you could use on Shabbos. Namely, you can always use ashes on Shabbos. You have filth on the ground. You can use the ashes to cover it up. You have spit. You have whatever. So therefore, the ashes themselves are not mukta. So it's the other way around. The point was the machta itself should be a kli from a lachta l'ister, and we should have cases where we can move it on Shabbos. Because there were ashes in it, we thought that would be a problem when we're trying to find out why the ashes are not a problem. Now we're saying the ashes are not a problem to begin with. The ashes are perfectly mutter to handle on Shabbos according to the Shimon. So what we're saying is, so in that case, the chiddush is that even though there's not only ashes, there's also something on there which is mukta, namely the splinters of wood. Nevertheless, you're still allowed to move it because, in other words, it's not a bosses for java also, because it doesn't contain something that's only, that's the point, in other words, because the splinters of wood themselves would be mukta, sure, because you don't have any purpose you could use them for on Shabbos. But the ashes are not, and the ashes we're saying are more important than the pieces of wood. Therefore, you're allowed to move the machta on those grounds. So therefore, in other words, so it's the opposite, exactly the opposite. Rava is saying your initial assumption that the problem was the ashes is not right. The actual problem was the splinters of wood. And now that we see that just like they're allowed to move a kanuna, the portable heater, even though that has that, the same thing over here. Now that's Rashi's explanation. You have a number of other explanations of Rishonim, what exactly the Gemara means over here. Among others, you have Tosfos and Beta, where it also discusses this point, says that what it means is that if you only had the machta, then you would have the rules. It would be like a klisha malachta l'ister. You're not allowed to move it except because of gufoi makoyim, right? But you would not be allowed to move it, for example, mechama l'tzel. If you're moving it, let's say, because it's in the sunlight and you're afraid, it's in the sun and you're afraid it's going to get damaged by the heat of the sun, and therefore you want to move it someplace shady, or it's in the rain and you want to move it inside or whatever. Once we're saying that it has the ashes in it, even though it also has shivrei etzim, then what we're saying is you're allowed to move it even where you're doing it mechamel of sale. That's our choice. Then you have the Ramban talks about the idea that the ashes themselves might be mukta, but the opposite of Tosfos, even though the ashes themselves, we could say maybe are mukta, the opposite of what Rashi is saying, that they're not. We could say they are mukta because they came about on Shabbos. They're no longer on Shabbos, but still, the machta itself is actually you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. So the ashes are bottle. So the point is, even if there's splinters, then the splinters are also bottle. The Rambam still uses the concept of graf shorei. He says you're allowed to move it because it's considered disgusting. The Ravid asks on him, what are you talking about? We see from the Gemara over here that's not, because Rava rejected that. So the Mishnah and the Rambam talks about over there that the Gemara was saying that maybe, first of all, maybe the machta over here, maybe when we were talking about where it is uncovered, or maybe not the whole container itself is a graf shorei, but the ashes, maybe the Rambam would say that the ashes themselves maybe are still considered that, therefore you could move it. We have a few different ways of understanding what Rava is saying over here. Anyway, the point is that Rava is saying that's why you're allowed to, for any of these reasons that we just discussed, is why you're allowed to move the machzor. The point is, even though there's shivrei etzim on it, which are mukta, nevertheless, one or another of these reasons that we mentioned from the Rishonim allows you to move it on Shabbos. Not like we assumed at the beginning that the ash. Not like we assumed at the beginning that the ashes were mukta, and the only reason we were allowed to move the we were questioning that in that case isn't the master of Klisha Malakha Leister, isn't it a boss of the Gavra Asr? Now we're saying it's not so, that it's not a boss of the Gavra Asr, even if it has something in it which is mukta, because you also have something in it which is not mukta, or you have the pan itself, maybe it's not mukta, etc. Okay. The Gemara asks, basically, out of a contradiction. We learn in a Braisa that this that we talked about a few days ago, that we said in the Mishnah that you had a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whether you're allowed to move a previously used lamp on Shabbos. So we said, forget about the question whether it was previously lit on Shabbos. That's another question. But let's say you have an earthenware lamp, we said, that was previously lit in. So we said, now it becomes disgusting. You can't clean it out fully. Rabbi Yehuda, therefore, says it's mukta machmas miyos, so you can't move it on Shabbos for any purpose. Rabbi Shimon would allow that. But the Braisa says, the Shavin, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would agree, Shein Yeshba Shivrei Tzila, that if there are leftover pieces of wicks inside the lamp, Sha'afil V'Talzol, then you're not allowed to move it. Because those leftover pieces of wicks are mukta. And the lamp is a boss of Kadavar also. So now the Braisa is not distinguishing whether there's oil in it or not. Now, according to Rav Shimon, the oil that was left in there after the lamp went out is not mukta. So at least according to Rav Shimon, we should be saying the oil was definitely on the face of it. We would assume the oil was more important than the wick. So therefore, than the leftover pieces of wick. So according to Rav Shimon, we should say that we have something in there more important, the oil. We have something in there less important, the remainder of the wick. And therefore, it shouldn't be a bustle for double answer. So why is Braisa saying that? So why is Braisa saying that you're not allowed to that even if Shimon says you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos? The answer is Amar Abai the Galil Shami. The answer is Abai says we're talking about in the Galil. What's different about the Galil than anywhere else? Rashi explains that in the Galil it's hard to get linen, and linen flax makes very good wick. Therefore, in the Galil, its wicks are much more expensive. So therefore, actually over there, the wicks are considered more important than the oil. And as we said before, if the non-mukta item is less important to you than the mukta item, then the thing that contains them is still a bottle for double offer. So in the Galil, the wick would be more important. Therefore, it's a bottle for double offer. Elsewhere, the oil, if there's any left, would be more important, and Rav Shimon would allow you to move it. Tosfos disagrees on that. Tosfos, in fact, brings from other Gemaras that imply that actually that flax is easily available in the Galil, maybe even more so than elsewhere. But Tosfos says the other way around. What it means is, in the Galil, they have so much olive oil because they grow a lot of olive trees over there. We know the famous story of the guy who needed to buy a million dinars worth of oil. Where he went, he wound up in Gush Chalav, which is a city in the Galil, and he found a Jewish farmer over there who was able to sell him all that oil and then some. So in the Galil, they had a huge amount of olive trees, so they had a huge amount of olive oil. So therefore, Tosfos learns the other way around. In the Galil, oil is so cheap that it's not as important as a wick. No, not that. In other words, not like Rashi, that they have a hardship, that they have a shortage of wicks, but the other way around. They have a huge surplus of oil, and therefore oil to them is worth a lot less than the wick. But in other words, Abaye is saying, in a place, according to Tosfos, in a place where oil is not produced in as large quantity, and it is more expensive, then yeah, in such a place, you would be allowed, according to Rav Shimon, to move the lamp on Shabbos because the oil is more important than the wicks. So that's that then. So that's the end of that discussion. So there we have the basic concept that a bosser for gavra also applies if, first of all, as we said before, only if it was a bosser at the beginning of Shabbos. There's a concept called Ein Mukta Lachtzi Shabbos. But also that it's a bosser for gavra also only if the also item that it contains is either the only thing in there or it's more important than anything else which it contains. But if you have something else on there which is equally or more important, then the item does not become a boss of the dog or officer. So again, as a practical thing that we have in our household when it comes to the Shabbos table, if you have the candles on the table before Shabbos and nothing else of importance on the table, then the table itself becomes mukta, and you can't move it for the boss of the dog or officer, and you can't move it for the entire Shabbos. But if you put the chalas on there, for example, before Shabbos, then you're allowed to move the table on Shabbos because then it doesn't become a boss of the dover, also because the chalas are important to you because you need them for Shabbos.
One question: why can't you think of basis of dover asur as a gzer on a gzera? The gzera of muktzi is mid a rabbanan on something that you cannot transport, and now you're making another gzera on that gzera.
Yeah. Because you're not saying you can't move the basis of dover also because you might come to move the mukta object. What happens is, when you have a basis of dover also, the basis becomes basal to the mukta object. So it becomes mukta along with it. When you have the candles on the table, for example, the moment when Shabbos begins, the candles are mukta, and the table, which is supporting them, at the same time becomes mukta because it is basal to them. So it's not exactly the same.
So you're not adding mukti to mukti?
No. So you're saying that the mukta item extends to include the object which is placed on. Again, you also have, I forgot to mention, there's another criteria involved, which is that it has to have been put there deliberately. Again, like the Shabbos candles on the table. If you just left it there accidentally, then even if it was there at the beginning of Shabbos, then it's not a basis of dover asur. As in the example we talked about the other day from a Mishnah later in the Masechta, where let's say you found coins on a pillow on Shabbos, you didn't deliberately place them there, or like we had actually the other day in the Gemara, where you forgot money on a bed that wasn't designated for the purpose, then you'd be allowed to shake the bed, and then you'd be allowed to shake the bed or the pillow or whatever and get the coins off.
Unless you placed it there intentionally for the point.
So for it to be a basis of dover asur, I guess we can say, we can summarize, there have to be three criteria. It has to be you put it there deliberately. It has to be that it was there at the beginning of Shabbos. And it has to be that there's not another item on that basis which is at least as important to you as the mukta object.
Okay. So that changes a bit. Okay.
Well, so those are the criteria. So in the case of the master that we were discussing, you deliberately placed the master there before Shabbos, and you put the incense in it, and it burnt, and you left with the ashes. It was there at the beginning of Shabbos. The ashes were there at the beginning of Shabbos, and we're saying that there's nothing else in there of equal importance to the ashes, because we said that even if there were unburnt pieces of Lavoina in there, then in a household like Rebbe's that wouldn't matter. So therefore, the thing would have been mukta. So again, that's why we were arguing that it was a basis of dover asur. And we're answering, again, either that it's not because the ashes themselves are not mukta, or for any of the various other reasons that we discussed. And therefore, ultimately, it's mukta.
So mukta is relative to the person, really, because if you're saying that in a house...
In the case of bosses of dover asur, there is another kind of mukta also, which to a certain extent depends on the person, namely when you have mukta machnas chisorin kis, which we're going to talk about in more detail. We're going to talk about mukta machnas chisorin kis in more detail in the 17th parak of the Masechta. I think we're also going to touch on it in the next parak as well, but I know in the next parak it talks about certain dinim of mukta as well. I don't remember if it talks about mukta machnas chisorin kis. But anyway, there you have also, that to a certain extent, that's subjective also. When you have an item which this particular person is not going to allow to be used for any other purpose because it's going to be damaged. So you have, let's say, for example, Shoyfet has a shiva knife as a classic example of mukta machnas chisorin kis. He's not going to use it for anything else, because he doesn't want it to get dented or nicked or whatever. But on the other hand, if you were to have a regular person happen to have a shchita knife in their possession and they just use it like they would any other table knife, then it wouldn't be mukta for them, because not mukta machnas chisorin kis. So yeah, certain dinim of mukta are subjective. Okay, let's go on. New discussion. This is relating back to, we learned yesterday, we talked about the concept of handling on Shabbos a candelabra made out of pieces. So we said if it's made out of pieces, then we said it's also that are unscrewed or otherwise connected together, then you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos because it may fall apart and you're going to put it back together, which will be also on Shabbos. We said if it's not actually made out of pieces, it just has grooves in it, so it looks like it's made out of pieces. Then we had a machlokes, Rabbi Yechonon and Rish Lakish, whether if it's a small one, you're allowed to move it or not. So now we're going to get back to this topic of putting back together things that are made, kalim that are made out of pieces. So the Gemara starts off. Levi bar Shmuel Ashkachinu of Abba over Huna bar Chia. Levi bar Shmuel found of Abba and Rav Huna bar Chia. They have a kaini apischa debate of Huna. They were standing by the entrance of Rav Huna's house, or of his best medrash. Amalahu. So Levi bar Shmuel asks them, Mahu lahachim mitzvah shel tausiyim b'Shabbos. Are you allowed to reassemble a bed of tausiyim on Shabbos? Tausiyim, Rashi says, there's two possibilities. Either it means copper, either it means people who refine and smelt copper, or it means weavers. In fact, there's a Tosfos in Avodah Zarah that mentions that both of those are valid meanings of tausiyim in various places in Shas. In addition, you have tausiyim also just means people from the place Tausi. This is the famous thing, Big Seven Teresh, we know, were tausiyim, and they spoke in their language, and Mordechai understood it, etc. So the word tausiyim has multiple meanings. Anyway, the point is, tausiyim, whether it means copper smiths, or whether it means weavers, they travel from place to place to do work. So therefore, what they do is they take along with them a collapsible bed. Their bed is made out of pieces, and then they take it apart. They carry it to the next place they're traveling to, and then they put it back together. Then they put the pieces back together where they're staying over. So are you allowed to put such a thing back together on Shabbat? So they told him it's fine to do that. You're allowed to, but also, but then Levi bar Shmuel came to Rabbi Yehuda and told him what Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Huna bar Chiya had said, and Omar and Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda said, how could they say that? Omar, Rabbi Yehuda said, Ha Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayu, didn't Rav and Shmuel both say, Hamachti Mitzvah Tarsi in the Shabbos Chayav Chapen, that if a person puts back together such a bed on Shabbos, he would actually be Chayav Chapen. So what are you telling me that there? What are you telling me that you're allowed to do it even L'Chila? Now, Tosfos asks the question, it's kind of odd to find such a machlokas, so, from one extreme to the other, to say that one opinion should say it's completely mutter, even l'chatchila, and the other one should say it's chayav chatas. You don't usually find such a machlokas in. Usually you have. If one opinion says it's chayav chatas, the other one's going to say, okay, it's also midrab banan. Also, Tosfos asks anyway, what would be the problem anyway? The whole concept of binyan and sira doesn't apply to kalim, like we were talking about yesterday. Although we talked about yesterday, maybe it does if they're tightly fitted together. Rashi over here anyway avoids that last question by saying it's not a matter of boina, it's a matter of makim apatish, that you're completing the last thing necessary for a kalim to be functional. Tosfos obviously is not learning that way. Tosfos is learning that it's a matter of boina. So the question would be that the problem is boina. So what's the problem? So Tosfos explains that like this. What we're dealing with over here is Rav and Shmuel are talking about the kind of bed where the pieces fit very tightly together. That kind of thing, yes, you'd be chayav chatas, whether because of boina or because of makom apatish. So now, what it is like this, though. In the case of the mikvah shel tausiyim, not necessarily do the pieces fit together that tightly. But you could still argue, says Rabbi Yehuda, if you're going to say that it's also daraisa to put them together when they fit together tightly, then even when they don't fit together tightly, why are we allowing it l'chatchila? You may come to do the same thing with the kind of bed whose pieces do fit together tightly. That's a typical kind of zera that the Chachamim make. So his question is not why Rav Abba and Rav Huna bar Chiya didn't say that chayav chatas. Fine, because the pieces of a mitzvah shel tausiyim fit together only loosely. But the question is, why are you saying that it should be mutter to do even l'chatchila? When on the face of it, we should make it zera because the two kinds of beds are easily confused. Okay, Anyway, the bottom line is, so far, what we're saying is we have a machlokes. Is it are you allowed to put together a mitzvah tarsiyim or not? Rav Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya are saying you're allowed to, and Rav and Shmuel apparently are saying you're not allowed to. So the machlokes makes sense. I have a contradiction. We learn in the Braisa like this. Hamachzik, we're going to talk about a number of different kinds of kalim that are made out of pieces that are attached together. Number one, Hamachzik Knei Menorah b'Shabbos. If a person puts back on a branch of a candelabra on Shabbos, Chayav Chatas, then he would be Chayav Chatas for doing that. So you have it's a candelabra. Sometimes you take off some of the branches, and sometimes you put them back on. So therefore, so according to Rashi, it would be makel patish. According to Tosfos, maybe it would be bona if the pieces are fitted tightly together. Konashos sayodin. On the other hand, then you have a stick that's used by plasterers. So Rashi describes like this: plasterers, when they have to plaster the side or the top of a building. Or for that matter, paint would be the same thing would apply to a painter. So you have, you know, where the part of the building that they have to paint is high up. How do they reach that high up? They have a paintbrush or a paint roller or whatever, or a piece of cloth, whatever Rashi described, which they soak in, they soak it in plaster or the paint or whatever, and then they attach that to a stick, and they attach another stick to that stick, etc. And eventually they have it long enough to reach. Nowadays, yeah, painters have similar kinds of things. Usually nowadays, the ones are made, they're telescoping. All the pieces are always attached together. You just extend it. You just pull out one piece from inside another. The kind they had in those days apparently are actually made out of separate pieces that attach together. So those kind, lo yachzir, you're not allowed to put the pieces together on Shabbos. V'im hechzir poter aval oser. If you did, then you're poter from chatos, but it's oser. And the reason is, Rashi says, because unlike with the candelabra, where once you put the branch on, you could conceivably use it always like that with all those branches. Here, with this konashos hayodin, you don't always. Sometimes you need it longer. Sometimes you need it shorter. You can't always. You're not using it. You're not using it all the time in one length. So therefore, unlike the candelabra, it would be poter avaloster. Reb Simoy, then Reb Simoy says, here's more examples. Keren agula chayev. If you have a round kind of horn, a round horn musical instrument, and you have holes in it in various places. Then what you do is you stick reeds into those holes, and that makes it produce many different notes. So if you put in those reeds onto it on Shabbos, chayev, then you'll be chayev chatos, because with a keren agula, with a round one, it takes a professional to know how to put it in, and they put them in very tightly. Therefore, that would be makel patish according to Rashi, or bona according to Tosfos, keren pshuta poter, but if it's a straight horn, then you don't put the pieces in as tightly, and you take them in and out regularly. So apparently the round horn that we're talking about is something similar maybe to like a trombone or a tuba or something that you have nowadays that has a lot of different valves and things attached to it, and they're attached more or less permanently, as opposed to the keren pshuta would be the kind of thing where maybe more like, I'm not sure what kind of musical instrument it would be like nowadays where you regularly put in and take out pieces, but whatever. The point is that therefore, in the case of a keren agula, you put in the pieces and you leave them there long term, and it takes a professional to put it in. You put them in very tightly. Therefore, it would be chayav chatos for doing that on Shabbos, as opposed to with a straight horn, you put them in much more loosely and you take them out regularly. So therefore, it would be poter. So the point is, in other words, that anything where you have pieces are tightly attached together are oser. So therefore, it should be similar to the candelabra. So we see that you chayev chatos. So again, even with the mitzvah shel tarsiyim, you should say that either if you put it together tightly, it should be chayev chatos, and even if fine, you don't put it together that tightly, still it should be also d'rabbanan, like the case of the konas hayodin and like the case of the straight horn. So Rav Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya are able to argue with Rav and Shmuel because they're all Amoraim, but they're not able to argue with a Braisa. Now, how are they able to say that you're allowed to put together this mitzvah shel tarsiyim, this collapsible bed on Shabbos? The answer is inu d'omer ki hai tana. The answer is they're following the opinion of another tana who disagrees. Okay, once you have a machlokes tanoim, then amoraim are allowed to pick sides. The tana we learned in a brisa, mal b'nei tamita, the squares at the bottom of a bed. The Rashi describes like this: you have a bed has legs. Now, the problem is that the legs of a bed, if you live in a house that has a dirt floor, the dirt floor sometimes gets wet or whatever. The ends of the legs, which are made out of wood, are likely to rot or to get ruined by the wetness or by whatever, just by decaying in the ground over there. So what do? You take other pieces of wood or maybe of some other material, little square shaped pieces that have a hole in the middle, the size of the leg of the bed, and you put the leg of the bed into that, and that way if anything is gonna get ruined, it'll be that malbin, not the leg itself, and the malbin is more easily replaceable than the leg of the bed. So that's the kind of thing where you take the leg of the bed and stick it tightly into this malbin. And also the kare hamita, also the legs of the bed itself, where sometimes you need to take out the legs and replace them. And also ulavochim shel skivos, and also the pieces of wood that are attached to a skivos. Rashi describes the skivos is a type of bow, as in a bow and arrow. You have a certain kind. Now, you have a regular bow and arrow where all you've got the bow, you've got the bowstring, and you've got the arrow. But you have a fancier kind of bow where you have like a little wooden stand on the back of the bow, which the arrow rests on that. And you use it's like, in English, I think it's called a crossbow or something, where it's able to shoot much more powerfully. But you have this little piece of wood over there that the arrow rests on. So those kinds. So again, it's also put in tightly. So all of those things, you're not allowed to reattach on Shabbos. V'im hechzer potter. If you did reattach them on Shabbos, then you're potter from chatas. Avo also, but it's also midrabanan. And the reason why it would be also midrabanan would be, okay, so we're saying even if you put it in tightly, the reason is because the braisa continues, v'lo yitzka. Now what you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to nail them in place. If you didn't nail them in place, then you would actually be chayav chatas, because that would be boner or makabu pakish, as the case may be. So therefore, in other words, according to the second braisa, what we're saying is to attach them tightly or loosely would be chayav chatas. To nail them in place would be chayav chatas, would be also daraisa. To press them tightly into place without nailing would be also, or even loosely, would be also the rabbanon. Fine. So far, that's like the first. So far, that's like the previous braisa that said that there are. It's not quite like the previous braisa. The previous braisa, we said there are some things which are attached tightly and are also daraisa. There are other things which are attached more loosely, and those are only chayav the rabbanon. Those are only also the rabbanon. This braisa is saying whether loose or tight. It's only the rabbanon. Only nailing it would be also the daraisa. But then we have another opinion. Rav Shimon Gamliel, im hoya rofui mutter. If it's loosely attached, then it would be mutter to do it on Shabbos. Okay, so you have a tana, you have Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that if it's loose, then you're allowed to. Okay, so the mitzvah shel tarsiyim, the pieces are not put together tightly. Therefore, Rav Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya are entitled to hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Bei Rav Chama have a mitzvah glolimisa. By the way, you're going to wonder, of course, what the halacha is like. We'll get to what the halacha is shortly. But first, the Gemara continues, Bei Rav Chama have a mitzvah glolimisa. In Rav Chama's house, or in his yeshiva maybe, there was a mitzvah glolimisa. There was also this kind of bed, this kind of bed made out of pieces. Glovanista literally means rolling, so maybe it means it was like the kind of bed where when you don't need it, you would roll up the pieces. You'd take apart the pieces or whatever and then roll it out of the way. Whatever the case, it's similar to a mitzvah shel tarsiyim. And And on Yom Tov, they would put it back together. Now, we know that the same dinim of Binyan and Makor Pakish do apply on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. So therefore, okay, in this particular place, case, they would put it together on Yom Tov, but the same, whatever the issues would be with it would apply equally well on Shabbos. So Omrei Ahumid Rabbanan L'Rava. So one of the Chachamim says to Rava, now why are they asking Rava if it's in Rav Chama's household? Rabbi Hanano actually has the gift that they asked Rav Chama. So the same person in whose house it was, they asked him, how are you allowed to do that? The Rashash gives an interesting possibility. We know that Rava's father was named Rav Yosef Bar Chama. So therefore, Rava's own grandfather was named Rav Chama. So the Rav Chama of the Gemara might be the one who was the grandfather of Rava. And therefore, so it's taking place in his household. Rava is there also. So they're asking Rava, how is that being allowed in your grandfather's household? So they're asking, my daitach, what are you thinking over here that you're thinking it's mutter? Binyan minasamhu, you're thinking that it's an indirect kind of binyan. In other words, because it's not tightly attached together. So minatsad means basically, Rashi says, with a shinui. So you're thinking, therefore, it's mutter. But we just learned, we just quoted the braisa. Mehi isura daraisa leka. Granted, there's no isura daraisa involved. Isura darabonan mihaika. But there is at least an isura darabonan involved. So how is it allowed? Amalei, and Rava answers, I'm not Rav Shimon Gamliel Svirlei. I hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel, as we said before, as Rav Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya also did. That he said in Hoya Rafui Mutter, that if it's loosely put together, then it is Mutter. So there you go then. So in that case, then Rava says, I'm following that halacha. So the actual halacha is like that. The actual halacha is nailing it together, of course, would be also and would be Chayav Chatos. Putting it tightly together would also be also, either because putting it together tightly would also be also on the grounds of binyan. We mentioned the other day, the Alpidema mentions in Shulchan Aruch, that even though we usually say ein binyan ustud of a kalim, that does not apply when you're attaching them together very tightly. So therefore, it would in fact be a malacha of binyan if you attach them very tightly. If you do it only loosely, then it would be allowed. Then it would be allowed. Now, what it is actually that a bit of a wrinkle in that is that when do we say it's mutter if you're putting it loosely together, is if it's something that's meant to always be loose. If it's something which normally is meant to be tight and you happen to be putting it together loosely, then no, because then you have the problem that then you have the problem that you might end up putting it together more tightly. So if you're leaving the pieces really loose, then fine. So that's the thing. If you have this kind of thing where the pieces regularly fit loosely together, then you're allowed to put them together loosely. But if it's the kind of thing where the pieces fit together more tightly, then you would be also to do that. Even if you put it together loosely, because you might put it together tightly. One place where this is relevant, I mentioned yesterday, is in Shmuel Shabbos Kilchot, it talks about the concept of playing with Lego on Shabbos, where the Lego pieces fit together, normally attached together very tightly. So therefore, we have a problem putting it together on Shabbos. Okay, maybe it's not the kind of thing where you don't normally make something out of Lego and leave it there indefinitely or for a week at a time or whatever. The kid plays with it and then 5 minutes later they're taking it apart for something else. Fine, but it would at least be also good up on it. If I remember correctly, what Shmuel Shabbos Kilchot says basically is that if a kid is playing with it on his own, then you don't have to prevent him from doing it. Because fine, it's only an issur d'rabbanan because you might come to, because you might leave it there for a long time. And after all, Lego is not one of those kinds of things that's made to stay for a long time. But adults shouldn't be doing it. Another case where this is relevant, actually, it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, is when you have things where you use when you have objects that you use screws sometimes to loosen them or tighten them. One example we'll talk about in Shulchan Aruch, actually, I've never seen this kind of thing nowadays, but it mentions, for example, a cup that's made out of pieces where sometimes you screw it more tightly together and sometimes you don't. So then you have a machlokes whether you would be allowed to do that on Shabbos. The Magen Avraham brings up a case involving a shtender. We have some kinds of shtenders where you have you want to raise or lower the top of it, and you have little screws on the sides that you use to raise or lower it. So would that be mutter on Shabbos? So Achronim talk about it. If they're different, because there you're not really attaching one piece to another piece, they're always attached together. It is completely functional whether the screws are in this position or that position. So you have Achronim talk about it, whether it's mutter or not.
So according to that logic, when you building dominoes together or cards, things like that, should be allowed.
Dominoes or cards, yeah, because they don't attach together tightly at all. Yeah, another thing that it mentions in Shmiras Shabbos Hilchasa, now that you mention it, is, for example, there's a couple of other examples. One is, for example, jigsaw puzzles you have a problem with on Shabbos because the pieces fit tightly together and they usually stay that way. But only if you have these kinds of puzzles where you have a bunch of cards that sit next to each other and form the puzzle, that you would be allowed to do on Shabbos. But the kind of jigsaw puzzle where the pieces interlock, that not.
Jigsaw puzzles fit tightly together only in one plane, but if you put them vertically, they dislocate, they disassemble.
That's neither here nor there. And if you put together a mitzvah shel prokim also, and you pick it up the wrong way, then it's going to fall apart. So what?
No, not the same.
Yeah, it doesn't matter as far as I know. And besides, which it depends. Some jigsaw puzzles are made tightly enough that even if you pick them up, they stay together. Whatever. The point is that he says that jigsaw puzzles are no good on Shabbos, but they're the kind where they don't actually interlock would be mutter. Another example of that, I think also in Shmuel Shabbos still thought, I don't remember, I've definitely come across it, is if you're playing Scrabble on Shabbos. Putting together if you're playing on a regular Scrabble board, then it can be mutter because the letters are just sitting next to each other. It's not considered writing either, for that matter, because you have each piece is on its own tile, so that's not considered writing. But if you have, sometimes you have fancy Scrabble boards where you have indents over there for the pieces. Travel Scrabble boards are like that. You have some fancy or non-travel ones are made that way, so that way the pieces stay in place and don't slide around. That would be a problem on top of it.
So what about these little chessboards where you insert the pieces into the chessboard?
So again, when we say we insert the pieces, do we mean again where they fit tightly together, like in a travel chess set? Then yeah, the postures would be the same problem. If we're talking about just like if you have this, for example, there are indents on the board and you have the piece goes on there, okay. But the difference is Scrabble tiles are exactly the same size as the indents. The base of a regular chess piece is not, I would assume, I don't know what kind of chess board you're talking about, but I would assume the bases of the pieces are not the same size as those indents. But
indents, but in the travel chess board, there are holes, and you could put the pieces tightly into the holes.
Ah, well, then if you can put them in tightly, then you got the same problem.
Yeah.
If it's the kind of thing where they only fit in loosely, I guess an example might be, for example, Battleship maybe wouldn't be a problem because Battleship, the pieces don't, well, actually, I should say, when it comes to the pegs fit in tightly. The ships in Battleships fit in loosely, so maybe you'd be allowed to put in the ships on Shabbos, but not the pegs, I'm not sure. Anyway, but these are the basic concepts that are involved. Obviously, when you have if you have any practical question about it, you got to ask the Rav. I mean, mind you, and the truth is, I mean, there are better things for adults to be doing on Shabbos than playing games anyway. But that's all that matters. All right, let's go on. Mishnah.
Well, if Nitor is on Shabbos,
well, fine. Okay, yeah. Okay, to play with a regular chess set, then fine. Okay, let's go on. Mishnah says, "Noisin kli tachas aner l'kabel mitzvotis." You're allowed to put a bowl under a lamp on Shabbos to catch the sparks that fall out of the lamp. The loyitim l'seichei mayim, but you're not allowed to put water into that bowl with neshu mechaber because then it comes out that you're putting out the sparks. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, v'hakamavato kli meheichon, right? How are you allowed to put the bowl there before Shabbos? Don't you have the problem that once the sparks start falling into it, it's going to be mukhtah? And we learned the other day that you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. You're not allowed to take a keli that was mutter to use before Shabbos and make it also to move on Shabbos by putting mukhtah into it. because, like we learned before, either because it's like breaking the Kali on Shabbos, or just the opposite, because like cementing the Kali in place on Shabbos, or because it's not covered Shabbos, whatever the case, so how are you allowed to do that over here? The answer is, Amar of Hunabreda Bishul, and you purchase Ein Behen Mamash. The spark, there's no mamashus to them. There's no substance to them, and therefore it can't be considered a bosses for double also because of those. Similar to what we were saying before on Amar Aleph, where if you have we were saying that if you have an object that's Osir and an object that's Mutter, that the Mutter one doesn't cancel out the Osir one unless it's at least as important as it. Here we're saying that the ashes themselves, the little sparks themselves, the little tiny bits of ash, are not considered important enough that the Kali would be busted for them. Again, the whole concept of busted for Jabra Osir is based on the idea of the bosses being bottled to the Dover Hoster. A Kali can't be bottled to these little insubstantial bits of ash like that. Okay. We said that you're not allowed to put water into the bowl because then you're putting out the sparks. So you want to ask, does that mean that we have over here a Stam Mishnah, like the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, where Rabbi Yossi says later on in the Masechta that you're not allowed to do something which is indirectly going to cause a flame to go out on Shabbos? Namely, you have a situation like this. In the 16th Perek of our Masechta, it talks about the dinim of what happens if a fire breaks out in a house on Shabbos. So you have various dinim of what you're allowed and not allowed to do. Now you have the Mishnah describes over there, the Tanakhama says, what you're allowed to do, let's say the fire is in one part of the house, you want to prevent it from spreading to another part of the house, what you can do is you can put up kalim over there to make a partition, to make a firewall to prevent the fire from going through. The Tanakhama says, and the Tanakhama says you can use any kind of containers, whether new ones or old ones. Rabbi Yossi over there says, no, there's a certain kind that you're not allowed to use. You're not allowed to take new earthenware containers that are full of water and use them to make this firewall. Why? Because new earthenware containers are more likely to break. As we talked about the other day, when a keli is new and it's first being used, then it's more likely to break than afterwards after it's been used a couple of times. So a new earthenware container is more likely to break from the heat of the fire. Then the water is going to spill out of it, and then it's causing that you're putting out the fire on Shabbos. Whereas the Tanakhama has no problem with that, because the Tanakhama is saying only if you're doing something directly. So the question is, and the Tanakhama would say, where you have a hefset involved, where you have a potential loss, namely because of the fire, or in this case also because you have the sparks can fall on the table or on the floor or whatever and set things on fire. So the Tanakhama over there would allow it. Rabbi Yossi is saying this also. If we're saying in the mission over here that you're not allowed to put the bowl with water, that sounds like Rabbi Yossi. Why we would rather say that Stam Mishnah goes like the Tanakhama. So the Gemara says, Tisbara, how could you actually think that the Mishnah would fit with Rabbi Yossi's opinion? Amar d'amar Rabbi Yossi, the Shabbos. And look, even Rabbi Yossi is only talking about that you're not allowed to put the new earthenware containers with water there on Shabbos, because then you're causing the fire is going to be put out when the containers explode because of the heat. The Erev Shabbos and Yom, even Rabbi Yossi agrees you're allowed to put a container, well, a new earthenware container with water in it, somewhere in near a fire before Shabbos. So even Rabbi Yossi is not going to be so machmir as to say that you can't put down a bowl of water to put out sparks before Shabbos. So then the Mishnah wouldn't work like either of them. So now, and the Chitema Hachanami the Shabbos, so you're going to say, okay, well, maybe our Mishnah is talking about that you're not allowed to put the bowl there on Shabbos. Maybe the Mishnah means that you're actually allowed to put on, that you're allowed to put the bowl there before Shabbos, but you're not allowed to put it there on Shabbos. No. We learn in a Braisa, noisening kli tachas aner lekabel mitzvotis for Shabbos. You're allowed to put a bowl under the lamp to catch the sparks on Shabbos. The ein sorech loyma the erev Shabbos. Needless to say, you're allowed to do that on erev Shabbos. But the lo yitzim l'seichet mayim. But you're not allowed to put water into the bowl. Mitzneishu mechaba, because you're causing the fire to go out, the sparks that fall into it. And that applies the Erev Shabbos. That applies even if you put the water in the bowl before Shabbos. The Ein Tzarech Loyma of the Shabbos. Needless to say, you can't put in the water on Shabbos. So obviously, we're not talking about a concept of Gram Tibui, because even Rabbi Yossi wouldn't have a problem doing a Gram Tibui before Shabbos. So if this Braita is telling us that you can't even do that on Shabbos, then it doesn't work according to Rabbi Yossi either. Ela, Amar Rav Ashi, said Rav Ashi says no. It's not a matter of grammar, people. You can even say our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, because Shiny Chacham of Mishnah Makarav as Tibuyoy. Because different over here, because what you're actually doing, it's not just gram tibuy. It's not just that you're causing indirectly that the sparks are going to go out. What you're actually doing is you're making that the spark is going to go out faster. So therefore, so Rashi explains like this. So if you were to do that on Shabbos. So in other words, the difference is like this. In the case later in the Masechta, you have ultimately what causes the water to spill out of the kelim when the heat of the fire breaks them open. But over here, let's say you were to put water into the bowl right now. Let's say you were to put the water right into the bowl as a spark is falling. Then obviously you're actually putting out the spark. So in general, if you put the bowl down there on Shabbos, then you're directly causing the spark to go out, because the spark falls directly into the water and goes out. So therefore, we're going to make a gzeira that you can't do that on Erev Shabbos either, because you might come to do it on Shabbos. Now, Tosfos discusses further on that. Now, usually, we learned back in the first pedic that usually you're allowed to start a malacha before Shabbos and have it continue on Shabbos. So why shouldn't you be allowed to put down the bowl over here before it's fine? So let's say, for example, the same way as we said over there, let's say that you're allowed to soak dye stuff before Shabbos, and then they continue soaking on Shabbos, and there's no problem with that. Or we said you can open up the faucet into your garden and let the water continue flowing throughout Shabbos. So by the same token, even though you can't do that on Shabbos itself, obviously, so why should it be any different over here that we're not going to allow you to put down the bowl with water even before Shabbos? But Tosfos answers like this. With those other kind of things, it's an actual av malacha. Therefore, the Chachamim are not concerned that you're going to come to do an actual Av Malacha on Shabbos because you're allowed to do it before Shabbos. People are going to realize that distinction. Of course, you're allowed to do Malachas before Shabbos and you're not allowed to do them on Shabbos. But over here, after all, we're talking about something that is, it's not so obvious that there's a Malacha involved, because you're going to think, well, I'm not directly putting out the spark. I'm only causing it. It's only that when it falls into the water, it goes out. Therefore, we have a reason to make a Xera. Now, mind you, Tosfos says, even if you were to put out the spark directly, it wouldn't be necessarily an Issur D'oraisa, because it's not a malacha shetricha legufa. And as we learned before, according to the Shimon, that itself would only be also the Rabbanon. So that would be a Gzeira L'Gzeira. Okay, Tosfos says this is one of the examples where the Chachamim find it necessary to make a Gzeira L'Gzeira, because otherwise people are just going to go and violate the whole thing. Okay, Tosfos also discusses another possibility that when we say over here, the Karavas Kibuyoy might mean also that, for example, if you were to actually take the bowl and lift it up closer to the spark as it's falling, then you actually cause it. Like this, the spark would have stayed lit for an extra second until it falls into the bowl. Like this, you're making that, it's going out a second earlier because you're lifting up the bowl towards it. And therefore, the Chachamim found it necessary to make it also to put the bowl there on Shabbos. And once they did that on Shabbos also, then they had reason to be concerned that if you do it on Erev Shabbos, you might come to do it on Shabbos as well. So anyway, that's the difference, again, between that versus the case involving the Uzen ware containers, where Bechlau, you're not, once you put them down, nothing, anything else that happens is the fire itself is what's causing the containers to break open and the water to spill out, as opposed to over here, you actually put the water down here directly in the path of the fire. Okay. Hadron Alach Kira. Okay. I guess we'll stop over here. We'll start the new parak tomorrow, Beth Hashem.
Shkoyach.
Yeah.
One guy. Okay.